All right. I will call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. This is our first official meeting. Some of you members and staff were down for our team picture last week, but that wasn't an official meeting, so folks in the audience, don't worry. We didn't talk about anything at all. We're going to do a number of things today. First of all, we're going to do introductions of members and staff, and then lobbyists, people sitting in the audience. We want to know who you are. We're not going to take long, but as you know, we're going to do that. When we're done with that, we'll be hearing two audit reports, one on Department of Agriculture and one on the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Just to get up to speed, as we're doing budgets, we want to understand these audit reports and what they mean, et cetera, et cetera. Housekeeping stuff to begin with. You'll have a file in this committee, obviously. There will be a save folder in it. Anything you want saved, put in there. Everything else will be jettisoned at the end of the committee, recycled. And at the end of the year, we'll give you the folder with all your saved items in it. You can file them or do what you want. But if there's anything you want saved, put it in the saved folder. Oh, I do have my penalty jar back again this year. I don't care if it's illegal or not. I don't care how it works. But if your cell phones go off, it's $1 for our coffee fund. If you answer the cell phone, it's $5. And I see Valerie Jarek here. You can tell Ronnie he's happy to prepay again. We have some lobbyists that will prepay because they know their phones will go off. And that'll help with our coffee fund. So the jar is here. Let's try and get the phones off. Mine will probably go off too because I have a new phone and I don't know when and if it's working. So we'll take that and put it up there. And by the way, that's the only rule this committee has. We're going to operate this committee just like we did the last 2 years. Representative Hamilton and Magnus are our vice chair and lead, and they know, frankly, members, if we can't run this as the most bipartisan committee in the legislature, something's wrong. Agriculture and Veterans Affairs should know no boundaries, should know no political party, and we should get things accomplished as a committee. And I intend to do that. That's why I don't have rules, but common sense prevails here, too. If you have amendments, if you have things to hand out, you know, get it to our staff. They still have to copy. They have to put it in folders. Get it to us as early as you can. I know there's times you can't do that. That's why I don't have a 24-hour rule. What I have is a gavel, and Hamilton will have that gavel once in a while, too, and I can adjourn and go home. I don't, you know, we don't need to finish a committee that gets out of hand. So that's the only rule we have is the coffee pot. The rest is up to you, and I hope you appreciate that. And Representative Hamilton, yeah, when you're chair someday, I want you to appreciate that, too. He claims he'll be chair someday. We'll see if he outlives
Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I will treat you with the same amount of respect.
Very good. So, beyond that, let's start with introductions. And all I want to know from you is a couple things. Number one, we want to know who you are and what district you represent or what your reason is for being here in this committee, what you do. Number two, as usual, we want to know what high school you went to so we can understand that dynamic again and start matching you folks up. And number three, I want to know what your favorite holiday food was last November through December. We've all had the opportunities now, so just tell us what your favorite holiday food was or is. So I will start. Representative Al Junkie from District 13B, Tandy, Ojai County. My address is Wilmer. I'm the chair of the committee, and I grew up in, I'll tell you, I'm the home of Jenny O'Turkey Store since this is the Ag Committee. Oh, by the way, we do have a coffee pot on. The coffee pot is always on in committee. And for those in the audience, food is welcome, too, in this committee. Unlike other committees, we welcome food and treats and anything you can do to help pass bills. Very much appreciated here. So feel free to do that. Jenny O'Turkey Store is in my community and my district, a little billion-dollar agribusiness. And I went to school at Wells Easton High School down along I-90 in Faribault County, class of 77. And my favorite fruit is krumkaka. I'm Swedish, and I love krumkaka. So, Representative Tremba, home economist, if you make krumkaka someday, you really got me on your good list. All right. I know you're not Swedish, so. All right. We will start with staff on both sides of the aisle, and then we'll move around with members.
My name is Andrew Dewar, AJ to a lot of people. You can call me AJ. I'm the committee administrator. And I went to high school in Mora, Minnesota, Representative Faust District. And I think my favorite holiday food was the turkey, probably from Representative Junkie's District.
Good answer.
My name is William Haler. You can call me Will. I'm the committee legislative assistant. I also work with Representative Aaron Murphy and Al Junkie. I went to Rosemont High School in Rosemont, Minnesota, and my favorite holiday food is pumpkin pie.
I will add that most of you will notice I lost my entire staff last year, too, and I assume that's a reflection on me and Kate Byers in the audience. We'll ask her later, why? My God, why? So we'll go over here to the vice chair.
I'm Representative Rod Hamilton. I live in Mountain Lake, Minnesota. I represent District 22B, which is the southwestern part of the state, all of Cottonwood County, all of Jackson County, and four townships in Nobles County, which encompasses Worthington and Bigelow. I went to high school in Humboldt, Iowa, the Humboldt Wildcats. When I graduated, you know, idle hands get in trouble, so my uncle moved me to Minnesota. Said, kid, I'm going to throw you on the farm and work you hard. Welcome to the real world. That's how I got my start. Holiday food, I'm pretty traditional, you know, when it comes to turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy and so on and so forth over Thanksgiving. However, I'm going to promote pork today, you know, and eat pork.
Very good. The lead Republicans.
Doug Magnus, I'm a farmer from Slayton, Minnesota, and I represent the southwest part of the state. Hamilton's my seatmate, just to the east of me. And I went to the Slayton High School, the home of the mighty Wildcats, which later on became the Mildcats, and we expanded, of course, and things go. I represent the epicenter of renewable energy in the state of Minnesota, with biodiesel, ethanol, everything, packing plants. We got everything down there. And I'm also a Vietnam veteran, and thanks to the veterans here that come to our meeting and serving and representing our guys, and like my good friend the commissioner, only I had the good sense not to get wounded when I was over there. I came back home in one piece. And so we continue to support our veteran folks. And my favorite is the pecan and pumpkin pie. It's a combo thing that
it's pretty good.
And I don't eat things I can't pronounce, whatever you like.
That's true. We'll just go around the table.
Good morning. Hi, my name is Paul Anderson. I'm from 13A, and like Doug, I am a farmer. I live up in Polk County. My district is 13A. Bud Heidrichen is a guy that I replaced. It seemed like everybody knows who Bud was. I raise corn, soybeans, and wheat. And my high school was what was a Starbuck High School. That's in Polk County. That's now a consolidation in with the Minnewaska Area High School. We were the mighty Bucks back in the days of the smaller high schools. And as far as my favorite food, I would have to say it's the Norwegian delicacy of Lesa. We have a few couples that get together before Christmas and to spend an afternoon making Lesa. We make about 200 of them, and it doesn't take long for them to be gone with Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I'd have to say Lesa is my favorite holiday food. Thanks.
Good. Good morning. I'm Ron Szymanski, state representative for District 18A, which encompasses all of McLeod County and a portion of Meeker County. I graduated from the Silver Lake High School, known as the Lakeites back then. We're now consolidated into Glencoe Silver Lake, home of the Class 3A state football champions. And I'm also a farmer, a little different scale than Mr. Anderson and Mr. Magnus. I have a small farm where I operate a few beef cattle and feed crops, but I also am an apple grower. And I have 12 acres of apple trees and market in the metro area farmers markets. And my favorite holiday food coming from a small dairy farm is eggnog. The holidays wouldn't be complete without eggnog.
Very good.
the chair of the policy.
I'm Mary Ellen Ochemba, and I live on a farm. I have the largest packing plant in the United States. I grew up in Lawn Prairie High School. My favorite food is cream cheese with strawberries.
Mm. All right.
Representative Andrew Falk from District 20A, and I actually farm as well. And my family operates a seed business, so we clean, process, and export seed and also some domestic food-grade products. And let's see, high school, I am a fighting saint from Kirkhope and Murdoch Sunburg, graduated in 2001. And I'm going to have to agree and disagree with Paul a little bit that I agree that Alefta is my favorite holiday food, but it's also Swedish.
I agree with that.
Al Doty from District 12B, that's most of Morrison and a great deal of Crow Wing counties. I have dairy and hog and turkey and chickens all over the southern part of my district. Not running loose, just, you know, well, sometimes, but I have Camp Ripley in my district, so between the ag and veterans, I have a great deal of interest in this committee. Of course, my wife's folks and brothers still are active dairy farmers in the district. Went to high school in Campbell, the honest to God, Campbell's. kind of sad, but you know, now they've gone the way of the Mildcats, and we have some other consolidated name now. But favorite holiday food has to be my mother-in-law's fudge. She makes me this great big container every year because she knows that's my favorite, and I never go without that if I can help it.
My name is Colby Sullivan. I work for the Nonpartisan House Research Office. I handle agriculture and bioenergy issues. I graduated from Abraham Lincoln High School in Council Bluffs, Iowa, which is southwest, sort of a suburb of Omaha, Nebraska. And my favorite holiday food is the Thanksgiving staple stuffing.
Well, I'm Jim Cleary from Brooklyn Park, and I grew up in Sleepy Eye. My father had a meat market there, so my favorite food isn't beef and pork. It's turkey any time of the year. And I had the pleasure of working some farms when I was a kid, starting at 14. $2 a day plus room and board, and worked from dark to dark. So everything seemed easier since then. The Marine Corps, Vietnam, and everything else. Marriage.
And Mr. Cleary is our researcher for veterans issues in Nonpartisan House Research. So.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Jim Reinholtz, the fiscal analyst assigned to staff this committee. I grew up in the Minneapolis western suburbs of Minneapolis, went to Robbinsdale High School, which is long ago closed, along with my junior high and my elementary school. My college, Gus Davis, is still out there, though. And, Mr. Chair, my favorite holiday food would be the cookies, and maybe I'll bring you some Norwegian krumkake, and you'll have a real treat.
Very good.
Over here.
I'm Representative Larry Hosh. I represent District 14B, which is pretty much the central part of Stearns County. In my district, I represent industries such as Golden Plump, AMPI, and we are the number one dairy county in Minnesota. We have more dairy cows than any county in Wisconsin, so the dairy industry is very important to us. So I would also, Mr. Chairman, high school is Tofino Grace High School. I saw the light and moved up to central Minnesota for college and never left since then. Almost half my life now I've been up there. And I would say that my favorite food would be Swedish pancakes, and since I'm from Stearns County, a good glass of whole milk.
I'm State Representative Andy Welty from District 30B. That encompasses Olmsted and Wabasha counties. I could go on and on about the list of agricultural commodities and products that come out of my district, but we do have beef, dairy, swine, poultry production in the district. Vegetable processing is also a large part of the district. We have a lot of sweet corn, peas, and then also green beans that are processed within the district. Beyond that, dairy is a major portion of the area that I represent. And the school I grew up in and went to and attended was Plainview Community Schools, both elementary and high school. We were the home of the Mighty Gophers, but now with consolidation, we are the home of the Bulldogs. And we actually have some sports teams that you might hear about this year. I think our basketball team is going to be going to state. Beyond that, my favorite holiday food is lasagna. It's become the Welty tradition. New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, we get together and have lasagna.
Representative Kent Deacon from District 2A up in northwest Minnesota, all of Norman and Menominee counties, most of Becker in the southern parts of Polk and Clearwater. And I live on the farm where I grew up, although the only thing I'm raising right now is a couple of donkeys that we use in parades. And in a bipartisan spirit, we looked into elephants, but I can't handle those in the parades. Donkeys are hard enough. And as far as I graduated from Twin Valley High School in 1982, the Twin Valley Tigers, they have consolidated since then with Gary, and they're the Norman County East Eagles now, where my children go to school. I have three children attending school there. And I have to say my favorite food would be my mother-in-law's rømmegrøt that she makes, so Norwegian food.
What is that for people that aren't Norwegian?
Milk mush. Maybe better cream mush.
I would add Representative Eakins, the chair of the Environment Policy Committee, so we're glad to have him and that crossover because we do overlap on a lot of issues with agriculture and environment. So.
Representative Paul Torkelson from 21B, formerly represented by Brad Finstead. I represent all of Brown County, part of Redwood County, and part of Watonwan County. I farm in Watonwan County. I raise corn, soybeans, and hogs there. I'm a graduate of St. James High School, however, St. James is not in my district, so I have the challenge of not representing my hometown. I'm very happy to be here. I have to admit my favorite holiday food is one that some people turn their noses up at, but it's definitely an acquired taste, and that is lutefisk. I'm sure you've all, if you haven't had that opportunity to taste it, maybe we should bring some to the committee sometime.
Maybe a field trip this fall when they're serving at our churches out there.
I think that would be excellent. Magnus is shaking his head.
We've got a new rule, and I don't know.
No rules.
Lutefisk was pretty good with a little bit of that Swedish meatball gravy on it, I noticed. You can put enough on it. It's pretty good. Representative Robin Brown, I represent District 27A. That is the Albert Lea area in southern Minnesota. That would be I-90 and 35, right where it crosses. I live on a small acreage and raise Peruvian Paso horses. There is a lot of ag land in my area, and I really appreciate being on the committee. I think it's going to be a way to serve my district very well. I graduated from Montezuma Community High School in Montezuma, Iowa, which is a little town of about 1,400. We were the biggest class in years at a whole 72 students. My favorite holiday food is my favorite everyday food, which is mashed potatoes and gravy. Could eat it every day.
Every day is a holiday.
I'm Representative Tim Faust. My favorite dessert is a peppermint dessert that my mother makes usually for Christmas. That's very good. I attended school at Litchfield, North Dakota, Litchfield Public School in Litchfield, North Dakota. I escaped from North Dakota about 20 years ago and now live in District 8B, which is all of Kanawha County, southern half of Pine County, and a little bit of Isanti County.
My name is David Musilevich. I work for House DFL Caucus Research. I graduated from Little Falls Community High School. My favorite holiday food are those little peanut butter cookies with the chocolate drop in the middle. I really like those, but real close to it, every year, Representative Bernie Leader gives staff these chocolate-covered potato chips. And, man, they are good. But the peanut butter blossoms win.
All right.
Good morning. My name is Michael Scholl, and I'm with Republican Caucus Research. Just recently moved from Columbus, Ohio, where I worked for the Ohio legislature. Grew up on a small farm just outside of Columbus, graduated from Taze Valley High School. And I would have to say my favorite food are probably sweet potatoes with some good marshmallows, some caramelized marshmallows on top. So, thanks.
Very good. We have two committee pages assigned to this committee. We'll start with either one. Okay.
I'm Anders Bastrom. I grew up in Roseville, Minnesota. This is my first time being a stage, so I'm excited about that. So, other than that, I guess I played hockey, but we weren't that good when I was there.
Favorite food? Holiday food?
Favorite food also would be lefse and probably kumquat. I would say it's a tie.
Very good.
I'm Arlen Rusted, and I'm back again from this community, I think, my third year now. I was born and raised up in northwest Minnesota in the East Territory. My grandfather homesteaded land in Norman County near Ada, and I spent my first 14 years of my life on the farm there. After that, the estate was sold. My father bought a small farm down by Detroit Lake. So I graduated from the Audubon High School. Because of that, we were the Audubon Zephyrs, gentle winds. They were gentle, we never won any. married a full-blooded Swede, high school sweetheart. I worked for the utility for 38 years and retired and wanted something to do, and I just started down here, and I thoroughly enjoyed being down here, working with the rest of the staff. And I worked up on the chamber also in the village. My favorite food, we only have it once a year because my kids won't eat it. Lutris. And let's top it off with some of Magnus's pecan and kumquat.
Very good. All right, we're going to move to the audience and work our way through. I just want you to stand up and same thing. Introduce yourself and why you're here, what you do, and again, where you went to high school, favorite holiday food.
Ed Anderson, I'm with Minneapolis Lecture this morning. Graduated from Whitefire High School for 4 years. And favorite holiday food I enjoy hearing. It just doesn't come up.
Sherry Tomshutter, the Minnesota Department of Ethnic Affairs. Graduated from Simley High School in Winter Grove Heights. And my favorite holiday food is a combination of stuffing, gravy, and turkey all mixed together.
Some novels in the same place.
That's true.
Christine Field, Department of Veterans Affairs, Legislative Director. I'm from graduated from Malacca High School, so I'm AJ's team rival, Indian versus the Mustang. And my favorite holiday food is a dish my grandma makes called snow pudding.
Linda McDonald with Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I attended and graduated from Rock City High School. And my favorite holiday cookie is peanut butter.
I'm Nora Nolden. I'm an intern for Representative Oklahoma. And I went to Fort Lake High School and I'm currently a student at the University of Minnesota, majoring in agricultural education. And my favorite holiday food is probably mashed potatoes.
I'm Clark Dyer, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm a proud graduate of Peace River Falls Lincoln High School. I'm proud. And my favorite holiday food, pork chops.
My name is Lyle Foltz. I'm the state adjutant for the American Legion. I went to high school in Mabel, Minnesota, and we were the Mabel Wildcats. And now it's consolidated with Canton, so it's the Mabel Canton Cougars. I graduated in 1964, and I would say my favorite food is a combination of lefse, mashed potatoes, turkey, gravy.
He rolls. He rolls that all up into the left side. I know how that works.
I'm John Cox. I'm the legislative chairman for the American Legion of the State of Minnesota. Graduated from Park Rapids High School, and I've spent all my life, 41 years in the military, and retired. I love my job with the American Legion, and that's why I'm here as the chair. Thank you very much.
Food.
And my food, strawberry pie.
Larry Ryan. I'm on the American Legion Legislative Committee this year. I'm the commander out of North St. Paul, Post 39. Graduated from Washington High School in St. Paul, which is now a middle school, class of 73. 6 days later, I was in the Air Force. Favorite food? would probably have to be the pickle jerry.
Kathy Vitalis, I'm executive director of a nonprofit Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and we assist homeless veterans and those in crisis statewide. I grew up in Hayward, Wisconsin, so I'm a Hayward High School Hurricane, and came this way for the U of M, married a Swede, and so I'm an Irish gal, and it makes interesting debates with the Irish and the Swedes. I basically debate, and he kind of shakes his head and looks at me. Let's see, favorite food would be from his grandmother in Sweden. It's rockabye cookies are actually made on a rounded tin.
I'm Kate Ferris from the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, and I graduated from Wilmer High School, and my favorite food is peanut butter fudge.
Wait a minute. First of all, you have a new name. You want to explain why?
I got married a month ago.
Okay.
So 1 month down the park.
And seriously, abandoning this committee, members want to know.
I was taught well by my chair. It takes me to spread my
wings. All right, we'll let you know.
I'm Steve Ernest, Financial Management Director at the Department of Agriculture, graduated from St. Cloud Tech High School, and favorite holiday food is probably solid cookies and food stuff.
I'm Quinn Cheney, I'm the Legislative Liaison at the Department of Agriculture. I'm from Springfield High School, so that's where I graduated.
Springfield, which state?
Illinois. Very good. I have a lot of family out of town, so my favorite holiday food is anything someone else cooks.
I'm Lynn Osterman, and I represent the beer farmers in the state of Minnesota. I'm also very interested in waste stream issues and agricultural relationships with renewable energy on a couple of other plants at the house. I graduated from North St. Paul High School, so I'm polar. I am none other than Leon Lilly, so you can figure that out. He's also polar. And my favorite holiday food is a wonderful pumpkin dessert.
That's former Representative Osterman, for those of you that weren't here when she was here.
My name is Bob Zelenka. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We represent grain elevator and feed mill industry in the state. We're in over 600 cities and towns around the state. We employ over 11,000 people. I'm from Montgomery originally, Redbird, and I'm Bohemian, and so I'd have to say classy. So I'm
I'm Scott Iverson. I represent the University of Minnesota Central Legislature. I grew up down in Laverne, Minnesota, and my favorite holiday food is probably a Norwegian cookie called cream.
Bruce Clavin. I'm a contract lobbyist here in St. Paul. I've been lobbying for my 15th year. I work for the Minnesota wheat growers, barley growers, all three sugar companies, potato growers, turkeys, beef cattle, the co-ops, ethanol plant, grain companies, etc. I also run the combine and do various things in the fall for my dad. I grew up in Milan, Minnesota, home of the Vikings at that time. They now consolidated. My favorite holiday dish, I'm 100% Norwegian, but I'm married in Italian. My favorite dish is something called suma, it's angel hair, noodles, with, garlic, olive oil, shrimp, corn, and stuff.
My name is Bill Bond. I represent the Minnesota Cooperative Retailers, the industry that provides farmers with tractor inputs. I grew up in Dodge Center, Minnesota, actually born near Wascoja, Minnesota, for those of you that know that area. And, my favorite food is my late mother's finished dish, castles.
I'm Tom Peterson. I'm the government director of the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I was homeschooled, so it's a long story. And favorite food is my family always has brisket for Christmas.
All right. Over here. Work your way through.
I'm Leanne Schmidt, and I'm editor of Session Weekly, which is produced by House Public Information Services. This is my third year covering the Ag Committee. I'm happy to be here. Graduated from Fergus Falls High School, but most of my years have spent in Montevideo, Minnesota. And I'll give a plug for the organics. My favorite holiday food is a free-range organic fresh turkey.
Hi, I'm Allison Tuttle. I'm with Lockridge Kendall Nellen. I'm a graduate of Owatonna High School. My clients are in the ag area, are the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association and Golden Pump Poultry. So we have a, not always free range, but we love our poultry here in Minnesota. My favorite holiday treat is Scottish shortbread, which is consistent with my family heritage.
I'm Rob Nosick, Deer Math, Minnesota Corn Growers Association, and full disclosure, I also do some work for the townships and assessors. I'm a graduate of New Prague High School. The Trojans, who used to fight the Redbirds over in the we've gone from 3,000 to 7,000 population. Hip food, even if they attack blood stuff.
I'm Valerie Jarrett. I work with the Minnesota Corn Growers and Minnesota Ethanol Producers Association. I graduated from Reform School rather than lobbying. Gravity City High School. And my favorite holiday food, I think, is my mother's house and lazy pie.
My name is Willow Rowe, and I'm a member of a public policy corps that a nonprofit city hall called Grass Pops has put together. There's sort of about 15 of us that you see hiding in the back corner of committees throughout the House and the Senate, just kind of being eyes and ears on the ground for a broad spectrum of nonprofits. I graduated from Proctor Academy, which is in central New Hampshire. 72 people that graduated from that, so a small school. And my favorite holiday food, which I didn't have this year for the first time ever, I think, was in my mother's cranberry pudding, the molasses-based steamed pudding.
My name is Joe Tarab. I'm a graduate of Wyndham Marriott High School. I'm an intern with Representative Hamilton. I'm a senior political science major at Cornell University. And my favorite holiday food, I guess, is pumpkin pie, but I generally like anything with bacon in it. So.
Turkey bacon.
Graduated from Anthony Village High School, and my favorite holiday food is cooking the cooking. My name is Christine Costa, and I'm in Minneapolis now, but I grew up in St. Paul Bridges from Town Park. And I was actually agreeing with whoever was over there that said their favorite holiday food is flashy. Grew up in those places.
John Anderson with the law firm Nestle and Kramer, and we represent Farm Credit Services, Complex America, which is a manufacturer of ag chemicals, and Pioneer Seed DuPont here at the state legislature. I think dozens of my Pioneer Seed representatives probably been along the committee from what I found out. And I went to Mankato High School, graduated in 69, and then went off to the Davis
office. Which high school in Mankato?
There was only one. Mankato West.
Just want to know how old you were.
Full disclosure, 1969, and I went off to college at the Davis office college, where Paul Torkelson and I kind of prepared the way for Mr. Reinholz, Speaker of the House, Ms. Gallagher. We prepared the way for a few other things as well, because it's all agriculture. Circus and I played in a rock and roll band together called Wild Oats. Yes, we so dark and winter thereof. And I think a mean German solo in Christmas time. Pleasure to be here.
Wow. Wow. Hi, Jerry Sean Felt. I work with half a dozen different agricultural groups, ranging from pork producers to county fairs. I graduated from Waseca High School, and I actually taught at Mankato West, so that's my link for this day. But I didn't teach him. I'm not old with his school. Mine would be date cookies. My wife always makes them. They're wonderful homemade date cookies, and the Joining Island will allow her to make six each year.
I would point out that's former Representative Schoenfeld, for folks that don't know, from Waseca, and he chaired this committee when he was in the legislature.
My name is David Gilbert. I represent the Independent Community Bank of Minnesota.
the Statewide Association, most members are from rural Minnesota and significant members to the ag community. I graduated from Glenwood High School and represented the Anderson District. And my favorite food would be, I think, rose depths, and I think you can get some pretty nice ones in Starbucks at that little place.
Hi, I'm Ray Bowen. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. I'm in southwestern Minnesota farm boy. I grew up in Brewster, Minnesota, the Brewster Bulldogs. Well, I don't think they exist anymore, but
they don't.
My memory's correct. And my favorite food is turkey and cranberry.
Hi, I'm Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I represent the counties on veterans issues. Annalie Garland still lives at Ag, if you know her. I grew up in Hutchinson, so I'm in Hutchinson High School, and my favorite color is baked sweet potatoes.
Good morning, I'm Cecile Purple. I'm with the Legislative Branch of Ottawa. I graduated from Recording High School in Cold Spring, Minnesota. I married a Slovenian from the Iron Range, and so through the years, my favorite food is walnuts.
Hi, I'm Brad White. I'm an audit manager with the Legislative Auditors. I graduated from Worthington High School in the southwest corner. I'm here today to present some of our report highlights for the Department of Agriculture audit. My favorite food is those little wieners. Beef, turkey, pork, doesn't matter.
I'm Jim Noel, the Legislative Auditor. And I'll get to the favorite food quickly because it's, for me, it's just good old turkey, mashed potatoes, dressing. I'm a bit of an outsider because I graduated from Hot Springs, Arkansas High School. But I want to establish my credibility because my family actually settled in Minnesota. My great-great-grandfather was actually a member of the Minnesota Territorial Legislature, Nobles County. So you have to know his name, my great-great-grandfather, he goes. But my family did go astray in going down to Arkansas. I came home.
Good morning. I'm Jim Reavy. I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office. I'm an audit manager there. I graduated from St. Agnes High School in Huntington Hall. And one of my family traditions is steak and lobster on the stage.
Hi, I'm Amy Jorgensen. I'm also an audit manager with the Legislative Auditor's Office. I graduated from high school in Pierce, South Dakota, the home of the governor. And my favorite holiday food would be oyster soup.
Good morning. My name is Mike Hassing. I'm an audit manager with the Legislative Auditor's Office. And I am, I grew up in Mankato, and I'm a Mankato East graduate, so cover both sides of the city. My wife is from New Prague, and so with our ethernicity, we also have potato dumplings.
Oh, very good. Anyone else that came in late? I know it's a couple escaped, I noticed. They left and we started doing introductions, so that was fun. All right. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the introductions. And, you know, we do that just so we can understand commonalities that we're, you know, whether we're representing veterans or agriculture, you know, we're all people from this state or other states, and we all have a common cause, and that is to get this committee done in a good bipartisan manner. Right, Magnus?
Yep.
All right. Well, let's get started. We're going to first, whoever's going to present, we're going to start with the agriculture highlights. The department is here, then we'll bring them up just for a brief response and any questions you might have. Then we'll move into the Minneapolis home. We have, again, the commissioner and folks that will respond to that report and questions, and then we'll be out of here by noon, which is when we're scheduled to be done. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself. We have a tape running, which is why we want to know who you are, and then proceed any way you would like. And by the way, I think you have materials in your folder. There's not only the report, but there's a one-page summation on both of these in your folders. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Cecile Furple. I am the Deputy of Legislative Auditor. I'm responsible for the Financial Audit Division within the Legislative Auditor's Office. If I can take just a few minutes to tell you a little bit about our division. One of the main efforts that we do is an audit of the state's financial statements. We spend quite a bit of our resources auditing those. The opinion on the state's financial statements was issued just a few weeks ago for fiscal year 2008. We also audit on behalf of the federal government the state's compliance with federal programs for about 25 federal programs that exceed about $23 million each. So we spend quite a bit of our audit effort there as well. We also do some other required audits of constitutional officers and also some other financial statement audits of a few entities. When we're not doing those things, we do internal control and compliance audits of a variety of state agencies. We have over 150 entities that we examine annually to determine where we are going to use our audit resources. We select entities based on various criteria, including the nature of their financial activity and the time since we've been there and whether any issues have arisen. We're going to be talking about two of those entities today, two audits that we did within the last year. And the first one is the Department of Agriculture. And Brad White, one of the audit managers, will discuss that.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Brad White, Financial Audit Manager with the Legislative Auditor's Office. We conducted a three-year control and compliance audit of the Department of Agriculture. In addition to receipts, we focused on the department's administrative spending for personnel and payroll, travel, and employee use of purchasing cards and cell phones. We concluded that controls were generally adequate over receipts and most aspects of payroll. However, we found weak controls over travel, credit cards, and cell phones. Out of the 15 reported control and compliance findings, 7 were focused on travel. We found that the department needs to better control mileage claims to ensure distances are reasonable, to have employees turn in travel claims more timely to avoid employer taxes, comparing actual to budgeted travel costs, and improving the coordination of any personal travel that might be combined on a state-paid business trip. But the more challenging findings involve some unique concerns. Department travel for marketing and promotions is exempted from state travel rules. Realizing that typical travel rules don't apply, we encounter, as auditors, costs we usually don't see. First-class airfare incurred by the commissioner and marketing staff, payments for bus tours, and reimbursements for group dinners. Considering the travel exemption, we felt that the department needs to develop alternative criteria to control and establish parameters surrounding those costs. In another finding, we noted that several department staff, including the commissioner, were actively involved in outside organizations that are willing to sponsor some of those travel costs. We felt there was a better need to control the coordination of those costs to ensure the state is only paying its appropriate share. We also found that travel benefits, such as frequent flyer miles, were being held in personal accounts and not being reported to the department's finance office as called for in Minnesota statutes. In the area of personnel and payroll, we identified a handful of concerns. One important finding involved the need for the department to document authorization and explanation for transferring payroll expenses between funds and program accounts. A second finding reported the need to better control the approval and justification for paying overtime to hourly and self-salaried workers. Finally, we felt there was some improved control needed over employee use of credit cards. Providing employee credit cards is an increased risk. Unless the department effectively controls those risks by using different reports that have been designed to monitor credit card limits and to monitor rejected transactions, and also to effectively document that charges on those credit cards met a public purpose. In the response to the report, the department management has developed some very specific corrective action plans that should improve those controls over those finances. Mr. Chair, members, those are the audit highlights, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
I just asked one question on the credit cards. While you said there should be more controls, you didn't find any overly suspicious amounts or unsubstantiated charges on those. You're just asking for more control over it.
That is correct. I think the theme and the concern there was documentation. To clarify, when you go out to make a charge or make a purchase, we cited in the report an example of a high-definition television that was purchased and ultimately not put on state equipment inventory. Just an example of something that ultimately is very sensitive to allow an employee to go out and buy a television. But we need to know and be assured that that television made it back to the department and is part of their equipment and state assets.
And just, again, on credit cards, just for my information, is that common for departments to issue employees credit cards? Is it for employees in the Twin Cities area, or is it for employees that are away? We have a lot of Department of Ag inspectors and others that live outside the Twin Cities and maybe harder to get vouchers or money. What do you see other departments and what's some history of that? Yeah,
Mr. Chair and members, the Department of Agriculture actually has two types of cards. They use a lot of times, they use those cards to travel. Certainly it's efficient to have a credit card with you to pay for your hotel or other types of travel costs. They do have another group of cards that they use to physically buy merchandise or other equipment in an efficient manner. Certainly, it allows the employee to immediately make that acquisition and bring that equipment back, you know, to the office. Comparing to other state agencies, no, it's not uncommon to have employees with credit cards. Certainly, there is some efficiency gained by allowing that. With appropriate control, certainly, it doesn't have to be as risky of a venture.
Are those credit cards then hooked right to the Department of Agriculture General Fund budget, or do they go through Office of whatever they're called now, Finance Department, and then to build off to the separate departments, or how does that mechanism work?
Mr. Chair, these particular credit cards are part of the department's process. They ultimately get approval and authorization from the Department Administration, but currently they manage those cards under their own management.
And final question on the credit cards is admin basically oversee all the credit cards then. Do we have one contract with a vendor for them? I'm talking about interest rates and other things that come into play on credit cards if they're not paid or carrying balances or leeway for payment. Typically, I think the state sometimes takes more time than a consumer might to pay a bill.
Mr. Chair, yes, there is a standardized contract and the department is using those particular types of cards. Certainly, again, the credit card environment is meant to be efficient, and certainly allowing the employee that opportunity to make those acquisitions directly is an important element to being efficient as an operation.
Okay. Questions from committee to these folks? Otherwise, we'll get the department up here.
Representative Hamilton. Are there reasonable limits on those credit cards in the event fraud would occur to where we are protected and to minimize our risk?
Mr. White.
Representative Hamilton, yes, there are. Each card has a, like your own credit cards, has a limit, typically $10,000 or potentially smaller, depending on the purpose of that card. Along with the card limits, there are particular types of commodities that are rejected. And so if you go and try to buy, for example, alcohol somewhere, it would reject those kinds of purchases, depending on the vendor and type of commodity. So there are built-in restrictions into the card to limit the risks of purchasing.
Ms. Furkel.
If I could add to that, one of the aspects of our recommendation is that the credit card bank that coordinates all of this, they do produce reports that can notify the department of when people are trying to make purchases that exceed their limits. Even though it's rejected, it's important information to know that, or when they are trying to make purchases at a vendor that's a banned vendor. So it really provides, those reports that we are recommending be reviewed by the department are important ways to monitor employees that may be trying to push the envelope a little bit with their credit card use.
All right, we'll just scoot you over or back, and we'll bring the department up for... Basically, we just want to know from the department, you've seen the report, obviously, you've responded to it, but respond to us in a committee what you're doing now to tighten some of this up. And again, as we go through budgets here in the next few months, a lot of these, it seems like nitpicking, but a lot of this stuff will become very important as we deliberate. Proceed any way you want.
Mr. Chair, I'm Quinn Cheney, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm the legislative liaison. And I just want to thank you for bringing us here today and giving us the opportunity to respond to the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report. Of course, we value the review that they've given us, and we have committed to performing a lot of the recommendations that they've suggested, and we will work with the Department of... Now, I can't remember what they're called now, Department of Finance, MMB, to make sure that we implement all of the reports. And then Steve Ernest is our financial director, and he will walk through some of the more specific findings.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Ernest, financial management director at the department. You know, I listened to Ms. Furkel yesterday at the finance committee hearing, too, and we do fall in with other agencies on some of the patterns across state agencies, some payroll issues, overtime issues, cell phone issues, and travel issues. I was glad that we didn't have anything in the incompatible duties category. That is a pretty serious one, or safeguarding receipts. I can give you some examples of some of the areas how we didn't meet up to the policies on the credit cards. We have about 10 of them in the department. Most of them are travel. A couple of them are in the finance and budget office. One is used to purchase plane tickets on behalf of employees that are traveling. There's a couple for like meat inspectors. They go out and buy samples at stores. An example of, you know, they are rejected for buying food, but an example of a violation would be if someone went to a hotel and got room service and then paid the whole bill together with the lodging charges and the room service charge together. The room service is a violation of the policy. However, it's difficult at that time, or maybe they forget to say, give me two bills, I have to pay this one on the card and this one separately. The Department of former Department of Employee Relations, their travel policy does encourage the use of purchasing cards to make the purchases efficient and easier for us to track directly. However, it is outside of the regular purchasing process, and so our TV that was purchased was a good learning experience for us that we have to follow through on those purchases, and we didn't get that an asset number on that in a timely manner. So we're reviewing our procedures to make sure that we do follow up on those kinds of purchases. On mileage claims on travel, we had left off the column on our form for local miles. So the auditor was comparing city-to-city miles, and as you know, when you're traveling out in the country, that doesn't equal up to the Google city-to-city miles. We didn't document that well enough. And then in one case, we had a board member come to St. Paul and drove some extra miles to stay with a relative. And we saved the cost on the hotel because they stayed with a relative, but the extra miles driving locally weren't documented well enough. So our overall...
Mr. Ernst, just to that, and the auditors and back can shake their head, is that the standard for the state check, is just running a Google map? Is that... I know it's probably not in statute, but that's, if you can look at a Google, and it's close to that, that's kind of where you're at. Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we're...
All right, they shook their head yes for the tape. That is what they might use.
We're asking for any reasonable documentation. Google is a standard now, or, you know, MapQuest. There used to be a state book for mileages between cities. There's the state map, too, but a lot of it is local travel, so we just want to... note that as well as possible. The biggest part of our travel policy is travel sort of spending is our promotional policy, which we haven't documented well enough where we will differ from the standard statewide policy. I'm in talking with the trade office at DEED because they have the similar exemption from the state policy. Actually, we got it from them a few years ago when we got responsibility for international marketing of agricultural products. So we're going to make sure our policy lines up with theirs. On the first class tickets, we didn't make this clear in our response, but we didn't pay for any first class tickets. All the first class travel that was taken was free upgrades from the standard class because we have employees that have the frequent flyer cards on the that qualified them for the free upgrade. So you can see like they got first class maybe going somewhere but not coming back. On the frequent flyers, this was a little bit confusing statewide policy. The reporting aspect of it, we're required to employees are required to report to us, and we are instituting a tracking to make sure they do that. We don't have a way to separate a state that we've found, according to Northwest policy, and we also always fly Northwest, a person can't have two accounts, a business account and a private account. That's stated in their policy. Some people say that you can do that. We're looking into that. But So the employees, we knew because we saw on their boarding passes that frequent flyers were awarded, but the threat to the state or the thing, the way the law states is that it's an employee's that an employee is barred from taking personal benefit from that. So it would be at the point that they take an actual ticket that they're in violation of the law. No, none of our money is out the door for frequent flyer miles. It's just a potential that we can get. And we have used that potential. The commissioner and others have cashed in some of their miles earned on their trips because they have traveled a lot to get free tickets, and we're just going to track that better. We did go back and look at all the miles, and we found that none was used for personal travel, that all the miles that were used for or that were gained through state trips are still in the accounts. So we're going to track that better, and maybe, like I think some other agencies do, for employees that don't travel very much, just say you can't claim frequent flyer miles, because it is a cost-benefit negative for us to track every employee's frequent flyer miles. So we only want to really track the big ones that we can actually get some value from.
Right, and I'm not concerned frequent flyer miles, but I will say I think there will be discussions this year on travel in general, and frankly, I think it's valuable to travel, and I know the department travels for trade missions and international food shows and other things like that. I think that's important, and I think we need to be careful as a legislature. We travel too, by the way, NCSL, CSG, Ag Chairs meetings and other things. I honestly believe that's valuable to members and to staff that go. We have staff that travel to those. If you live within the borders of your state, you're pretty narrow focus on what you do. And so I might be different than some of my colleagues this year who may want to cut back on travel or ban travel or other things. I think that's very short-sighted. And again, that's the chair's opinion, obviously, but I know that discussion will be had, and I think we need to be careful what we do. You know, for a while we did ban travel a number of years ago in the legislature, and I don't think it served anyone very well because, frankly, we still travel. And as Representative Dill will opine, then we use our campaign funds. And I don't think that's a very transparent way for our auditors. If we're utilizing our campaign accounts, which can be used legally for unreimbursed legislative expenses, which travel becomes, but again, it's not transparent then. It doesn't go through Paul Schweitzer's office or other places, and it's more difficult for people to know how we're utilizing funds. And so I think it's better to be open. I think it's better to reasonably reimburse people for travel, but again, keep controls on it and make sure we're, you know, I know you always fly Northwest, which is Delta now, but they're not always the best price carrier. We have low-cost carriers coming in. I think some of that could be discussed by legislature, how to get, you might be able to get a ticket for half the price on another airline at times, or mechanisms to track those fares and lock them in when you know you're traveling in advance, etc. So I think there's other ways to go about the travel situation. Are there any questions for the department? Faust, Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question comes from a beginning of a sentence in the middle of page 9 where it says, on another trip mainly paid for by another organization. The question isn't about that trip specifically, but is that something that happens quite often where other organizations are paying for trips for either commissioner or other department members? And you know, if that happens on a regular basis, and are those trips going to places like Scotland to play golf, or are they, you know, what type of trips are they really, I guess?
Mr. Chairman, that happens occasionally. Most of those are promotional trips. Some of that is federal money. A good amount of that is federal money. That's another organization than the state. Now we're planning one to China, although I heard the federal government might be banning travel. So that one's on hold. Occasionally we will get gifts from promotional groups. The money will come into the state treasury and it will go into our gift fund, and it will be earmarked for a purpose, and then it will go through all the regular documentation. The statewide policy is that no employee should get reimbursed directly by another organization, the employee. However, if the outside organization pays for something directly, like paying a hotel directly, we're supposed to document that, and we need to do a better job of that. That was one of our findings, that we need to basically show that no one's been put up in the Taj Mahal or something that would constitute a really valuable gift, that they got through their position. So I guess those are some of the instances things happen.
Representative
Faust. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick follow-up. I mean, give me a ballpark. I mean, how many dollars are we talking? Are we talking $5,000 or $500,000? I mean, if you added all of those trips up together, how much are we talking?
Cerns.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faust, I would guess $20,000 a year, something like that.
And Representative Paul, it's not uncommon for, I mean, even NCSL, CSG, I mentioned some of our organizations, they offer scholarships and they offer, you know, you can apply if your state isn't paying for you to go many times. They'll pick up airfare or they'll pick up hotel expense. And the question becomes then, if you stay longer or you divert from that trip, who's paying for it and where, you know, those types of questions. But it's not uncommon to have folks very legitimately pick up your expenses when you travel. And I encourage folks, if you can't get approved for travel, to apply to some of those organizations. They actually have pretty good plans to get you out to their meetings. So, all right, we need to move on. Thank you, department and auditors. Now we're going to do for the next 20, 25 minutes the Minneapolis Veterans Home. And we appreciate you being here and appreciate the vets in the audience waiting. This is, I think, more important than the one we just heard. Obviously, this has been, members, we took over this account with the merger, if you remember last year. Veterans Home Board was a standalone board, and they have then since been merged with the Department of Veterans Affairs as of a year or whatever it was ago. And so some of this, I think there's some overlap, but certainly this committee and the veterans of the state are very concerned about the situation that's been an ongoing one for years at Minneapolis, and we hope we're moving forward in a positive way, maybe even since this report. But we'll let you give us a summation for 5-10 minutes, and then we'll get the department up here to visit with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have with me Mike Hassing. He's our audit manager that was responsible for that audit, and he'll explain the results of the audit to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. I was the audit manager for the audit of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. I would like to add that during this current audit cycle, we also audited the Veterans Home at Fergus Falls, and we also did a closeout audit of the financial activity of the Veterans Home Board once it transferred into the Department of Veterans Affairs. But certainly we want to highlight the audit of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. This is a very critical audit report. There are very serious financial management concerns and internal control deficiencies highlighted in this report. There's a total of 18 findings and numerous recommendations in this report. And even more concerning than that is that from our last audit that we did in 2005, there were a number of these recommendations that were not addressed and were not implemented by the staff at the Veterans Home. We know during this period of time that we did our audit scope that there was a lot of challenges and a lot of change going on at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. They had a number of different administrators come and go. They had a number of financial management staff turnover and changes, as well as other staff vacancies. They also had the Department of Health doing inspections and monitoring the care that was being provided. They had federal investigations and federal reports dealing with too. And that ultimately all led to the governor's executive order to transfer those responsibilities and oversight into the Department of Veterans Affairs. But that did not excuse the home from its financial management responsibilities. And as we discussed all these issues with the commissioner, with the deputy commissioner Acevedo over the Veterans Homes, with the administrator, and with the business management staff, I do want to add that they concurred with all these recommendations, and they were very forthcoming and very cooperative throughout the audit. The finding number one is kind of an oversight finding, an overall finding, and unlike at the Department of Agriculture, this audit includes findings that are very cross-cutting in nature. It just seemed like every area that we went into, we encountered some sort of problems and difficulties that were very concerning to us. And we did take a comprehensive look at a number of activities throughout the Veterans Home, the cost of care, the resident accounts, gift and donation accounts. We looked at payroll. We looked at administrative expenditures, procurement, fixed asset, inventory control. And again, very cross-cutting concerns. Again, we concluded that the Veterans Home did not fulfill its financial management responsibilities to control its financial activities and did not ensure compliance with laws and regulations. And these are very concerning conclusions. In finding number one, we kind of identify, again, the points that brought us to that conclusion. There were serious internal control deficiencies throughout the organization. There was a lack of administrative oversight and an unacceptable level of financial management. There were financial records that lacked integrity due to errors, missing documentation, incomplete reconciliations. And again, there was just this lack of fundamental internal controls that created an environment that created a high risk of errors and numerous opportunities for fraud. Now, while we say that, we did not have any direct evidence that any fraud occurred, but this control cycle at the Minneapolis Veterans Home was of such a nature that we were unable to determine if fraud actually occurred or not. Some of these fundamental internal control weaknesses related to the safeguarding of receipts, safeguarding of their assets, not reconciling their internal accounts and accounting systems for accounts receivable, for the resident accounts, for the donations to the state's accounting systems, not restricting access of their employees to those accounting systems, and also just a lack of documentation for a number of transactions. And again, that is a big red flag for auditors when they go in and you ask for documentation or a personnel file or something to support a transaction and it's unable to be provided. In addition to that overall finding and those first few findings in the report, which I guess are findings 2 through 5, another area that concerned us was in the payroll area and specifically related to overtime, and that is finding 7 in the report. The home incurred over $2 million of overtime every year, and there are certain employees that earned more in overtime than they did in the regular salary. And along with that, there was no authorization, no direct verification of that overtime. And we concluded and calculated that certain of these employees would have had to work 45 to 60 hours of overtime every pay period during a 3-year period. So not just once, not just for a month, but during that whole year in order to accumulate those kind of benefits and compensation. And so again, we question, you know, whether in fact those employees actually really worked those hours or not. The other key issues that we highlighted in the report are a lack of control over their fixed assets and certain inventory, such as their non-pharmaceutical drugs within the organization. The pharmacy lacking separation of duties, having one person the ability to purchase, receive, record. Also, unsettled cash advances from the gift and donation account regarding resident activities, where a employee would take a group of residents, they would advance $500 to take them for some event. No accountability on the backside of that transaction, whether it be receipts to support the expenditure or returning of the cash funds. And for fiscal year 2007, there was determined that there's $12,000 of unaccounted cash for expenditures in that area. That is in finding number 12. They also had some errors in their cost of care calculations. Again, these were small amounts, but again, they're errors and for allowable costs that do affect the residents that are there. And so again, a concern with that, as well as there have been a number of thefts and break-ins that occurred while we were at the home. And again, there is a responsibility for the home to report those incidents to the legislative auditor as well as to their local authority. So again, some very, very concerning issues related to the operations. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Hassing, we have 4 other veterans' homes in Laverne, Fergus Falls, Silver Bay, and Hastings. You said you did the Fergus with this. You didn't. We're not doing that report here, but in comparison, Fergus came out. I mean, you're not finding this as a systemic thing throughout the homes. This is specifically you're finding it in Minneapolis. How often do you audit the homes like this?
Mr. Chair and members, we try to get out these homes about every 3 years, kind of on a cycle about that time frame. We did audit the Fergus Falls Veteran Home this year, and in stark contrast to the Minneapolis, we actually had no findings or recommendations to them. Very well managed and very well run. We also I've actually personally audited up at the Silver Bay Veterans Home. I think probably the last time we did that audit a few years ago, and again, compared to Minneapolis, certainly not anywhere near the current concerns that we have here with this report.
Okay, Representative Hodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the magnitude of the findings with the Minneapolis Veterans Home, is there going to be an effort to try to speed up your next audit of them? I mean, I think every 3 years seems, when there's the severity of these findings, is there going to be a plan to audit them next year or earlier than the 3 year?
Ms. Circle?
Mr. Chair, and Representative, when we select our audits that we're going to include in the next round, we do consider things like the magnitude of prior audits. We are not on a 3 year cycle, but after we haven't audited someplace 3 or 4 years, it starts to elevate as a higher level audit. With the degree of these findings, there's kind of competing factors. We do want to allow enough time for recommendations to be implemented and for changes to be made, and for that to for us to be able to see over a period of time that, for example, monthly reconciliations of accounts have been done more than just for 1 or 2 months, but that they've been done over a year or a year and a half. So we certainly would be looking at most likely a shorter time frame than 3 years, but getting right back in there is not a good idea either.
I'm wealthy. Okay. Let's get the department up while we have a chance. And department and the home. Welcome to the committee. And members, I'll tell you, you know, this is one of these reports you want to hang on to. I will try to get the committee out to the Minneapolis Veterans Home. I'd prefer to wait till spring so we can walk the grounds and look at that facility. I think it's one that we're going to pay attention to the next few years as we get through some of the past that we've had. And I think it'd be good for the committee to have a view of that after we get done with our heavy workload. We're, with your permission, we'll probably visit you out there as a committee, too. So, Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Clark Dyru, Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is an amazing report. There's not much in the way of excuse. But I would like to give a little background. In 2005, or let me back up, prior to 2007, the Minnesota Veterans Homes were run by a governing board of 9 people. Under them was an executive director who then controlled the administrators. The situation in Minneapolis had been developing from probably about 2002, something in that order. And it came to a head in 2005 with stunning headlines. There were 30 correction orders, many life-threatening. There was a lot of press, as you remember, in 2005. A year later, that'd be 2 years ago now, I believe, there were sentinel deaths. There was follow-up issues with the Department of Health. There was the VA was threatening to withdraw their per diems. That is a time at which the governor created the Long-Term Care Commission, which lasted throughout pretty much all of 2007. And at November 19th of 2007, the Veterans Homes Board was dissolved, and the homes were put under Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. So we're talking about November of 2007 forward. We have a deputy commissioner for health care rather than an executive director who then has the administrators working under him. That's Gil Acevedo, whom you met last year. The health issues have improved dramatically, and as of last right around the first part of July, we are free from all continuing, the orders that were outstanding from the Department of Health that have been repeatedly dealt with. So, knock on wood, we are functioning quite well in the direct care. We also knew there were this issue of the financial audit. We were asking that an audit be done somewhere close to our takeover so we could clearly figure out where we were. That did not realize the depth of the problems. The auditors referred to the prior audit, which was done in 2005. The letter that was sent to the Office of Legislative Audits was dated, I don't remember the exact date, it was dated like July of 2005, assuring the Office of Legislative Auditors that everything was going to be taken care of. It was less than a month later that that gentleman resigned. That was when all the troubles hit. And it was August of 2005 when he was gone. And the depth of this reporting, like I said, we just did not realize, what all had gone on. Now, with me today is Ed Anderson. He has been with our department a relatively short period of time, and he's been with the state for 30 years. He is currently the business manager of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. In the audience there is Sherry Kromschroeder, in the front row. Do you want to raise your hand at least? She is our finance officer for the department. And then, of course, our legislative chair, Christine Keel. But first of all, I want to say that the people that are here today have been working on the problems. We really have no excuse for this. Much of what was not in place has been put in place starting last November. But to be honest, at that time, Ed became the... he wasn't the business manager. The business manager, the finance people are no longer with our department, and as are several other people. So Ed has been business manager since, March?
End of 2006. October.
October, yeah. And then I see the finance officer left... in the last June, something like that. So, I don't know if you want to go point by point as to what we've done.
Commissioner, thank you for that. Basically, my take on it is as follows. Again, a very serious report, and one that we are going to watch very closely as an oversight committee for the finances of that that home. And this is a huge financial report. And but in deference to the department, I will give at least personally some leeway. I do know that things changed. And members, I think the change is good, because when we had a Veterans Home Board, it was difficult to say where the buck stopped. They were an appointed body. They really weren't under the control of any of our departments, and frankly, not even the governor's office. But today, the buck really stops at the governor and the commissioner, as far as someone we can go to and that can answer these types of questions. We didn't have that up till November 19th of 07. And so this audit was done this year, mid-year. And they've since hired a deputy commissioner that oversees. You can see they have new business people. Again, no excuse whatsoever. But I guess what we want to know in a minute or two from the business manager is that you are indeed, get you on tape, you are indeed serious about this. You are changing the way business is handled on that campus. And again, we will follow up on this and other things as we come out to take a look personally at this, too. We're taking a personal interest in this. So.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ed Anderson, and I am the business manager at Minneapolis. And to, again, without making any type of excuses whatsoever, this was an audit that we welcomed. We were in communication early on with the legislative auditor. We wanted this to be as open and transparent as possible to lay a baseline so we could find where the problems were and so we could move forward into the future. The steps that we have taken to date would include hiring a permanent administrator, where previously we had interim administrators that were coming and going like a revolving door. We've hired two new assistant administrators that are now permanent and in place. They have very strong backgrounds in the healthcare industry. Most recently, one of the assistant administrators came from the Department of Health with 30 years of surveying experience. So again, very strong, both state government and private industry experience. As the commissioner stated, we have hired some new additional financial people. We found that increasingly people had become so ingrained in doing things the old way that they were very reluctant to make changes, so we made the changes for them. We've recently written a strategic plan for the facility that includes goal number two as resolving and instilling financial integrity within the facility. We've incorporated within our performance reviews areas of responsibility that will be reviewed on an annual basis in each individual's performance reviews as part of our monitoring and ongoing. And I personally report to the Quality Assurance Council within the facility on a quarterly basis as far as the status of this audit report. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are taking this extremely critical and making our best effort to make a change, make a difference.
And members, we'll be going through all these budgets. When we talk about overtime hours and some of the things in here, we will be discussing those as we do budgeting for these homes also this year. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Dyrud, and first of all, I just have to say I have a lot of respect for the work that you've done, and I've served on the Veterans Affairs Finance Division before, Finance Committee, for 4 years. For Commissioner Dyrud and Mr. Anderson, I think it's, if we wait 3 years until we do another audit, that's too long. We in the state, and not only in the state, but the federal level of government, we can get a lot of bad press by the accounts that come out in the press related to the veterans' homes and how we treat our veterans. And I think that we owe it to the residents in Minnesota to follow up and do another audit, if that is possible. And I think that's possible because we in the legislature have control over the audit commission. And I'm wondering if we did a follow-up audit this summer or sometime later this year to see if these 18 points are truly being dealt with, if you'd be willing to do that. I mean, I just see that as a necessary part of this process that we're going through right now with evaluating what's going on at the Veterans Home.
Ms. Schneider.
Representative, we are. I don't know the finer points of the Office of Legislative Audit. I think a point, we are certainly open. We are prepared, I don't want to say 100% all of them, but I think all of them are in place. I mean, processes have been changed. And I think what I heard Ms. Ferkel say is that part of this is that, you know, you can balance your account 1 month. Can you do it over the long haul? I mean, some of this will take a little time to make sure that we are, in fact, doing it on a regular basis. But we are open to an audit anytime. I mean, we are.
Representative Welty.
Yeah, can I have one follow-up question? Can we bring up somebody from the auditor's office?
Ms. Ferkel.
Ms. Ferkel, in your professional opinion, when you look at the report that came out from the auditor on the veterans home, how long would it take to implement the changes needed in order for you to go back in and do an audit and to be able to say yes, they did meet the requirement, or no, they did not?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we would like to have at least a year of implementation to look at, and I think looking at a period shorter than that would not be very helpful.
Thank you. Well, that just the last follow-up question. Then, Ms. Ferkel, I think that it is necessary for us to do an audit in the time frame that you say that we need. And so what is that date?
When was the audit?
Can you give us an idea, an estimate as to what month of what year we should be looking at having a follow-up audit done?
Mr. Chair, Representative, our report was issued in November, and if we use that as a starting point of when the department and the home started making changes, certainly they couldn't turn things around on a dime. With November being the starting point, perhaps looking at fiscal year 9, which would have started in July of 08. No, I have my years wrong. Fiscal year 10, which would start in July of fiscal year 9. Looking at that time period would, I think, be the soonest.
Okay. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question, I think, is more appropriately put to the auditor's office as well. And I understand that there was a lot of turnover among the management over previous years, and I was wondering, as far as those that are in charge of the direct care for the residents, is there a large turnover there as well? And I was wondering if there are any findings as far as the turnover, and what if there is a high level of turnover, what would account for that? Is pay a factor? Is pay adequate to attract good quality people to care for the residents in this home? And one other question, too, as far as how it may compare with, for instance, Fergus Falls, which you did a recent audit on as well, what would be the differences that account for some of the problems that Minneapolis has faced, but not Fergus Falls?
Ms. Ferkel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, your first question really goes beyond the scope of the audit, and perhaps the department can address if there are factors that are contributing to turnover. We did identify that turnover was one of the things that creates turmoil in the organization and makes it difficult to establish and follow policy. So we feel that the turnover was a contributing factor to the poor financial management, but what caused the turnover really is beyond what we looked at. I'm sorry, your second question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the second part was, I guess, a comparison with Fergus Falls and any of the other audits that you may have done. What may account for the differences between the outcomes?
Mr. Chair, Fergus Falls, actually, we had some of the same auditors testing the same criteria as we did at Minneapolis. We had a very consistent look between those two institutions. And we really feel that a strong leadership, a strong tone at the top about what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, expectation that good financial management practices will be followed, and really an awareness by management of what those good financial practices are, and a way for them to touch into the processes to know, are the reconciliations getting done, are things being followed up on, are things being done appropriately. That was more of what was lacking at Minneapolis, was less knowledge about what good financial management consisted of, less oversight, and really less commitment within the culture of the home that good financial practices were going to be followed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Dyrud, I maybe direct the first part of the question to you then, as far as the direct care is concerned and the level of turnover and the level of pay, is it adequate for attracting good people into that profession?
Chair, Representative Eakin. I'm trying to condense a lot of history in a short period of time. The administrator leading up to 2005, apparently not much outside complaining, had dismantled the leadership of the Minneapolis Veterans Home. The nurse supervisors were done away with. The in-service training had been done away with. It was in crises in 2005. From 2005 forward, basically, positions were not filled. There was a consultant that had been hired who ended up with a quite a healthy contract. When we took over in November of 2007, the top five positions at the Minneapolis Veterans Home had only one was filled and permanent. That is the state at which we came on the scene. Leadership is everything. There are two reasons why nursing home, well, facilities go bad: finance and leadership. And it was no mystery once we got in there. All the positions that need to be filled are filled. They are with excellent people who came in with eyes open
and understand. I mean, the Minneapolis Veterans Home is not a beginner's place to start with someone with a new license. But anyway, if there is an issue with size between Fergus Falls and Minneapolis, it is considerable difference in population. I think that with leadership, the people that work at the Minneapolis Veterans Home are as fine as anywhere else in the metro area. I mean, leadership. There's an incredible amount of training going on. I really hope that you come out and just see the facility. And so getting it back on track, and then it will be my duty before I pass on into Commissioner Pastor to ensure that a structure is in place. Remember what I said, if one person out of five was, we were one accident or illness away from total chaos. We need to get a system in place. The pay is what it is for the state. Well, they can get more in many private sectors. Are the jobs available? I mean, that's an argument that goes on perpetually. But no, we don't pay as much as the VA across the road. We don't pay as much as many private sector jobs, but we pay better than other private sector jobs. So it's a tricky.
And Commissioner, members, what we'll probably do is have the nurses and some of the staff, when we're doing the budget on this home, come in and visit on some of the overtime needs and some of the what they're seeing as needs for employees too, from their perspective, looking at, I think would be very helpful for us.
The overtime issue is really right. We're really working
on
that.
We'll explore that. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And that was my question. In light of the fact that the audit may not be done again for at least a year or so, I'd like to know what specific things you've implemented to kind of watch and guard this big overtime issue. What specific things have been changed?
On the overtime issue, specifically.
The overtime issue is killing the Veterans Home. There's no doubt about that. It's taking resources that could be better directed elsewhere. And we realize that it's a serious, serious problem. A number of the overtime costs that were incurred in prior years were as a result of lack of staffing. We had a number of positions, as the Commissioner said, that went unfilled. That was also occurring at the nursing and HST level as well, too. So we have people that were incurring large amounts of overtime, as Mr. Hassing testified. And quite honestly, there's a number of people that have learned how to work the system in order to get paid more overtime. We've identified those people. We're taking disciplinary action to prevent that. We diligently worked on filling the positions that are vacant. In the current fiscal year, we're about $500,000 less in overtime costs than we were a year ago. We meet on a literally daily basis with the administration, and we talk about what are the challenges, what are the issues, what are some of the driving factors of overtime costs. And again, we're taking this very, very seriously. Again, because it takes away resources that we could have better directed elsewhere. With regards to our facility versus Fergus Falls, Fergus Falls has about an 80-bed facility. They have maybe 35, 40 people on staff. In comparison, Minneapolis, 341 beds and over close to 700 employees. So in scope and magnitude, we really can't compare ourselves to Fergus Falls other than taking advantage of their best practice business practices. And we're doing that on a monthly basis with all the business managers. We have a monthly telephone conference, and we try and exchange thoughts and ideas and take advantage of those best practices. With regards to making changes and a future audit, we didn't wait for this audit report to come out. We had already identified a number of areas that were deficient, had already taken steps to resolve the issues. And as we went through the audit, we asked the auditors to take a look at what our current practices are versus what our past practices were to ensure that we were on the right track and making the changes that were needed to be implemented.
Okay. Well, thank you, and Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like a few comments here. On the degrees of the finding, the changes appear to be healthy and productive, and they're definitely needed. And, Mr. Chair, you talked about accountability and with the new oversight, the governor's committed to veterans. We have a commissioner that is a veteran. And so that is, in my opinion, extremely healthy. I think the one of the best comments that came out of all this was from you, Mr. Anderson, who said that you welcomed the report of the auditors and you're putting those steps in place to address the findings. I have to agree with Representative Welty. I think it is critical we do have a follow-up from the auditors as well. And that way we continue working together to address the needs of our veterans. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, can I make one additional comment? Representative Hamilton, we would be willing to provide a quarterly report that is copied to the Department of Finance to this committee if you wish.
That would be helpful. Our staff will work with you on that and the auditor's office on when we might, what we need to do to make sure we get in the queue for a relook on that after a year's pass. Again, very serious issues. One of the more concerning audit reports that came out this year, and certainly we're going to work with you. It's not us versus you. We're with you, but mainly it's about the patients and the families out there and seeing to it that they have care second to none as veterans who have served this country. So with that, members, let me just give you a brief. Tomorrow we're not meeting because folks are either going to Humphrey Institute or whatever, but there's no meetings. Next week on the 20th, we'll be at the Department of Agriculture for a tour and presentation by them. We want you to see and touch and feel the department and the people over there. And we like to start our two-year biennium doing that. So you can walk over there in the tunnels. You do have to go outside for about one parking ramp length when you get out of the campaign finance centennial, and then you go across to the department. Just ask them at the front desk when you get there where to go. But we'll be there at 10:30 starting our meeting. So try and be on time. It takes about 20 minutes to get over there. It's a good walk. The 21st, we'll start two hearings on Green Acres, and I'll send that out to members in the members and staff. We got a lot of people that are worried about paying more money or not paying enough, or we got assessors worried about collecting money or not collecting enough, and so we're going to try and settle that. What we're going to do is hear the audit report on Green Acres that day. Then we will hear from assessors associations. We'll hear from farm groups, and anyone who wants. If you have people who want to testify, that's the day to testify on Green Acres. I suspect there were two bills introduced yesterday. I suspect there'll be a handful more introduced. After we take that full day of testimony, then we'll come back the 27th, the next week, and we'll try and put together one bill of this committee that we'll send down to Representative Marquardt and Lynn Chesky, and that's what they've asked for, is one bill coming out of here so that they don't have to deal with a dozen bills, and they hope we can get a consensus out of the ag community, since this is one of our issues we've heard about over the summer, and it's financially, everyone's up in arms on it now, wonder if they're going to have to pay more or plow up their fields or whatever. So we will hear testimony next week. The following week, we'll put together a bill and get it down to taxes. And then the 28th, the day after that, Department of Veterans Affairs will be over there for a tour and presentation to touch and feel those folks where they live. And so that'll take care of our month, and by that time we should have governor's budget and other things ready to go, and we will be zooming the next couple months into budget issues. So, Commissioner.
Chair, they have card readers in the tunnels. People get trapped, so just as a word of warning, make sure that your cards are...
What we're going to have is our committee staff, one or the other or both, take those walks, and so when people ask how to get in and which door to go in, they can give instructions before we get there, so watch your emails. That's why we got staff. All right. No further business. We're adjourned.